So yesterday we started the third parak. Thank you. And we spoke about the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in the first mission in the third parak about how to construct a bezdin. How do we get the agreement as to, number one, which bezdin to go to between the two litigants? You know, one litigant pulls towards this bezdin, the other towards that bezdin. And how to get the dayanim to make up this court. We need three dayanim in Dini Mamonos. And the Mishnah begins with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's sheet is that each litigant will choose one dayan, and then they together, the two litigants, will decide on the third dayan. That's Rabbi Meir's sheet. The Chachamim say no. Each Baal Din will choose a dayan, and then those two dayanim will choose a third judge. Now, why does Rabbi Meir push this agenda that the Baalei Dinim should be choosing the third judge? So the Gemara here on Daf Chof Gimel Amud Aleph says that Yetzei Hadin La'amito, that Rabbi Meir's opinion was that that if the two litigants will choose as a joint decision the third judge, then we have a greater chance that the din will be a din emes. And at the end of Shia yesterday, we were trying to figure out why does Rabbi Meir think that this is advantageous, that the two litigants should decide on the third judge. Why would that lead to what we call a din emes? So we suggested basically two approaches. One approach is the following, that this is not really objective, this is subjective, meaning what we're doing is we're analyzing the mindset of the litigants. We want to get to the point in which the litigants are satisfied with the final decision, the verdict that's handed down by the Beis Din. The one who serves to lose, whether it's Reuven or Shimon, he might have doubts, and he might think that maybe this is not a din lamito. But if he's actively involved and he has veto power in deciding who the judges are, then he has no one to blame but himself, so to speak. In other words, he has to accept, and he'll happily accept, the verdict of the judges. Now, Tosis offers another suggestion, another approach about din lamito, why Rabbi Meir advocates that the litigants are so actively involved in determining who the judges are. And he says the following, because judges fit into different categories. They have a certain inclination when it comes to either being mahapech bechova or being mahapech beschus. And therefore, what we want to guarantee is that no one should claim that most of the judges, let's say two out of the three of the judges, fit into one particular category, that they look to be mahapech bechova to try to find the accused guilty, or mahapech beschus, they have a more liberal approach, you know, let's try to protect the the accused. So in order to make sure that there shouldn't be any sort of a bezin that was stuffed, you know, that was calculated in such a way that there'll be an inclination of rov dayanim in one direction or the other, we give the Baalei Dinim the right to choose that third dayan. And hopefully what's going to happen as a result is that once the two litigants have a mutual consent on who this third dayan is, then there won't be even a chashash, any sort of suspicion that this third dayan belongs to one category or the other, because we have the mutual consent of the litigants. Now, the Rush goes out of his way to point out that we should never think that what Rabbi Meir is worried about is the actual falsification, you know, the actual of a sheker, a real sheker, chas shalom, on the part of the dayanim, that heaven forbid that's not going to happen. We're only talking, as we said before, about the subjective impression, you know, the image in the mind of the Baal Din, and we want to make sure that he's satisfied with this process, and that the dayanim are acceptable in his eyes. So what we're up to for today is V'chachamim Omrim. So let's see if we can find the place. We are at the... Now, the way that my daf is structured is that there's a section in the middle that juts out, and then there's the wide lines on the bottom. So in that section in the middle that juts out, you could look at the third line, and you'll see the two das v'chachamim omrim. You have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the chachamim say that the two judges will decide on the third judge. And the Gemara now wants to clarify, what is the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the chachamim? So the Gemara suggests the following. Neima, should we suggest that the machlokas really revolves around the principle of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav. Now, what this issue is about is the following. How do we view the dayanim? Is each dayan, you know, interested in himself, you know, he's focused on his appointment as a judge and doing the best job that he possibly could. He doesn't have to look to the left or to the right to see who are the other judges. That's none of his business. He was appointed to this court, and that's his responsibility, or no. The judge should be acutely aware of who his co-judges are. The same question applies in witnesses. Let's say, for example, I come to testify in front of a court. I have a responsibility to testify. I saw the case. I'm aware of the facts. Do I have to look to my left and my right and see who are the other witnesses? So this is going to be an issue, because Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rav, says the following, Ein Eidim Chos Min Al Ashtar, witnesses should not sign on a document, Elim Kein Yodim Mi Chosei Mimohem. They should know who is the other witness, or who are the other witnesses who are signing together with them. Because what's going to happen is that if the other witness turns out to be possible, then the shtar itself is possible. And even though I'm getting talking first person, even though I know I'm kosher li'edus, so this doesn't really cast dispersion on me, but nevertheless, I'm trying to present an edus which will be acceptable. I'm trying to create a shtar that will be valid. And if I sign a shtar together with an apostle, it's really embarrassing to me, because it means that I participated in some sort of an effort to falsify a shtar. Again, even though I didn't do anything that I'm guilty of, you know, I'm kosher, I'm not a witness that's related or Russia or anything like that, but nevertheless I joined up with another witness. And this concept, I think, is what's called Tziruf Kat, which means that the entity or the unit of testimony, which is made up of a minimum of two witnesses, is a unit that's indivisible, and we work as a team. And therefore I have to know who's on my team. You know, could you imagine, I'm just giving a mashal, if you were an astronaut going up in space, you want to know who are the other astronauts, because one of the astronauts is going to be manning the, you know, he's engineering the spaceship. You know, you don't want to end up whatever. So here too, you know, we're in a joint effort to create edus. And the Adrama adds another point here, that we have a principle called Eidus Shebatla Miktsasa Batla Kula, which means that if there's one rotten apple, it spoils the whole bunch. So to the extent to which my responsibility is to create a valid Eidus, I want to make sure that there's no rotten apple here in the bunch, in the kat. So it's a twofold issue here. Number one, it's embarrassing to participate in Eidus, and the Eidus is going to be disqualified. And number two, it's not right to project and present Eidus when the Eidus is really not reliable, because al pi halacha, that's going to be the sheet of Rav. The other sheet is going to say that that's not your headache. Your headache is that you saw something and you testify, and you don't have to worry about the kashrus of the Eidim. Let the Dayanim in Bezdin decide which witnesses are qualifying, which do not. You don't have to have that headache. But Rav's opinion is Eidim chosmen al shtar elim kein yodim mi chosem imayim. They will not sign the shtar until they check out who is signing with them. The Rosh writes that according to Rav, this is a very nice recommendation. We call it an Eitzah Tova, but it doesn't in any way touch on the critical issue of whether the witness is kosher or not kosher. You know, it's, even if he should have done a better job and thoroughly checked out the other witness, but nevertheless, if he didn't do so, that doesn't impinge upon his status. However, there is a Hagos Ashri who says that Rav is worried me'ikar adin. In other words, Rav is not just giving you an Eitzah Tova. Rashi is saying that within the purview of your responsibility as a witness, you should be checking and you must check out the other witnesses. Again, b'di'eved, if you sign the shtar without checking out the other witnesses, the shtar is still kosher. The Hagos Ashri doesn't deny that. But he is sort of rubbed the wrong way when the Rosh says that according to Rav, this is only an Eitzah Tova. It's much more than an Eitzah Tova. This is actually a requirement within the purview of his Eidus. Now, we've been talking until now about witnesses. Let's now jump to the topic of judges. And the Gemara is now assuming an equation between the two. The analogy is that just like, according to Rav, a witness should check out the other witnesses, so too, the Dayan, who's going to be sitting now in judgment with another two colleagues, he should be checking them out to make sure that they are ksherim, and they could judge together with him and form a court that is a viable and a valid, reliable court. Now, although it's true that Rav addressed the case of Eidim, he did not address the case of Dayanim, the Gemara thinks that al Pisvara, the two are comparable. And to the same extent that Eidim should not want to sign on a shtar that might become posel, because the fellow witness, his colleague, is posel, so too, in the case of a Dayan, it really doesn't speak volumes on behalf of a Dayan who's sitting together with another judge who is disqualified for judgment. And once again, we could add the point of Tziruf, that there is a unit here of judges that form a chalos bezdin, and they have to worry about the viability and the validity of that bezdin. So therefore, Rav would say that just like witnesses should not sign until they check out the other witnesses, so too a judge should not participate in a bezdin unless he checks out the other dayanim who are going to sit with him on that bezdin. And now the Gemara explains the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham. Rabbi Meir Lesley de Rabbi Yudom Arav. Rabbi Meir says each man is unto himself. You know, each witness has to worry about his responsibility, doesn't have to look here, look there. It's not his job to check out the other witnesses. And we reject the principle of Rabbi Yudom Arav. Now, if this be the case, Rabbi Meir is going to say that the Bali Dinim are now responsible for checking out the Dayanim and choosing them and deciding which Dayan should be sitting on the Bezdin. And therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, even when we get to the third judge, his appointment should be decided by the Bali Dinim, by the litigants themselves. It means that the judges are not responsible to check out one judge from the other. So that now Rabbi Meir objects to what the Chachamim say, that the two judges that have already been appointed, they should decide who should be the third judge. The judges, according to Rabbi Meir, don't have to be involved in that clarification who is going to be the third judge. That's not within the purview and the responsibility of a judge. Hence, that responsibility falls on the shoulders of the litigants. Insofar as they want to get this case up and running, they should be deciding on the third judge. For Rabbanan, the Gemara says, Islahu de Rabbi Yehuda Marav. The Rabbanan embrace the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, which means that just like Edom have to check, each aid has to check out the other aid that's joining him, so too each Dayan has a responsibility to know who is the other Dayan that's sitting with him on that same Bezdin. And therefore it makes sense to place the responsibility on the shoulders of the first two judges that have already been appointed, that they should clarify and decide who would be the third judge. Now here I have a note, L'chor yesh lahakshos, Kimosha Dayanim Borim Esadayin Ashlishi, according to the Chachamim, that it's the judges, the two, that decide on the third judge. And they don't want to sit with a judge who's not Roy, who's not Hagun, he's not up to par. He says, why then, according to the Chachamim, are the Balidinim involved, and here the Chachamim accept Rabbi Meir, in the choice of the first two Dayanim? Why not do it this way? Kol echad me'adayonim yesh lo lachshol shema hasheni einu roi. Each dayan has a responsibility to make sure that the next dayan, whoever he is, let's call number two on the list, is roi. He is a valid and suitable judge. So why do we have to get the balei dinim involved in choosing the first two dayanim? Let the dayanim themselves make that decision. Just like they're going to decide the two dayanim on the third dayan, let the entire bezdin from beginning to end be constructed, be decided, and appointed by the dayanim. So the marshal offers the following answer. He says, "Li'achar shekvar nivru shnei dayanim." In Yivru Shnei Balei Dinim Dayan Shlishi V'hu Dayan Shein Oroi Yitztarchu L'Shevesim HaDayanim HaRishonim V'lo Yuchlu Lomar HaDayanim Shenivru Shein Orotzim L'Sheves Imo B'din Ki Yisbaishu V'azeh Shein Orotzim L'Sheves Ino Adin L'chein HaDayanim HaEli Sheborim Es HaShlishi Aval v'kshebaldin echad Bor Dayan Echad Shein Oroi Yochel Lomar HaDayan Shebaldin Sheini Birer Shein Rotzel Sheves Imo Bedin Velo Yavosh Hadayan Ki Hadayan Lo Nikba Shein Bezdin. So that the Marshal gives a very, shall I say, conceptual, what we call a lumdish answer to this question, and he says everything depends upon whether that choice of a Dayan will create an entity called a Bezdin. And here's the difference between the first two Dayanim and the third Dayan. Clearly, with the appointment of the third Dayan, we have an entity of a Bezdin. But when we're talking about the first two Dayanim, we don't have an entity of a Bezdin yet. So therefore, he says the following. When you've already chosen the first two Dayanim, then the Dayanim, these two, will feel a sense of awesome responsibility vis-a-vis the choice of the third Dayan. And if it's Edo Roy, they're going to have to sit with this Dayan and be part of a Bezdin when he's not really suitable to sit as a Dayan. That's a heavy responsibility placed on the shoulders of the first two Dayanim, because now that third Dayan is the clincher, so to speak. He completes the set and he makes the Bezdin into a Bezdin. And he says the following: Im yivaru shnei balei din dayan shlishi. Supposing, and again, this is the logic of the Chachamim, that the two balei din will decide on the third dayan, and it turns out they agreed to appoint a dayan who's not suitable. He's eino roy, eino hogun. So the first two dayanim will have to sit with this third din, Yitztarchu l'sheves imo adayonim rishonim, v'lo yuchlu lomar adayonim shenivru einam rotzim l'sheves imo b'din. They will not have the gumption to say, we, the first two, we don't want to sit with this third dayan which the Balei Dinim agreed upon. Ki is baishu, because they're going to be embarrassed that Eino Rotsim L'Shevesimo B'Din. In other words, he's the third dayan, he's going to make the Bezdin into a Bezdin, and they're going to be embarrassing him by telling him, well, you're not suitable. Lachem, Hadayonim, if the Dayanah will choose the Shlishi, then they will certainly check him out and decide whether he is Roy, whether he's an appropriate choice. Aval kishe baldin echad birer dayan echad she'eno Roy. But you might ask the following question: what happens when the baldin chooses a dayan that's not appropriate to sit as a judge? Is there going to be an embarrassment if the other Dayanim say, we don't want to sit with him? And the answer is, because since the Balei Dinim are choosing only the first and the second Dayan, is then it's not embarrassing for the Dayanim to say that we don't want to accept the Dayan that was chosen by the Baldin. Eino rotze l'shem simo b'din lo yavush. There's no busha. Because a Dayan lo nikva shem bezdin. Because we're still in the process of determining the makeup of the court. Until we get to the third dayan, and we're in the motion, in the process, is the dayanim feel very comfortable to either accept or veto the choice of the Balei Din, because there's no Bezdin yet. So in the process, in the course of the process of deciding who will be the dayanim, the dayan will get up and he'll say, no, this dayan is Eino Roy. But it becomes very embarrassing when we get to the third dayan. So if the Balei Dinim would choose the third dayan, then it's going to be very difficult for the other dayanim, in event that the third dayan who is chosen is Eino Roy, to say we don't want to sit with him. We already have a Bezdin here. He's already sitting. The court is convened, so to speak. Now the question that I wanted to ask here is, how does the Marshal help us understand why the Chachamim hold that the Balei Dinim are the ones who choose the first two Dayanim? Halo kol echad me'adayanim yesh lo lachshosh shema sheni eino roy. So I think the Marshal's answer to this problem is that even though the Balei Dinim are involved in choosing the first two Dayanim, and to that extent the Chacham accept Rabbi Meir, they want to get the Balei Dinim involved in this process of choosing the Bezdin. But nevertheless, we don't have to worry about someone who's not Roy, because since we're at the beginning, as we said, of the motion, of the process, then the Dayanim will look to the left, look to the right, and they'll say, well, we can't sit and part of this Bezdin because this Dayan is not Roy. So the Gemara now rejects this approach and looks for an alternative approach. Lo, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is not about Rav. Kuli Alma, both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, Isluhud Rabbi Yehuda Marav, accept the sheet of Rav, that Edim have to check the other Ed out, the Dayanim have to check out the other Dayanim. V'das ha-Dayanim Kuli Alma lo pligid be'inon. There's no machlokas between Chachom and Rav Meir about the following fundamental principle. That's called Das HaDayanim, Be'inon. That we need that the Dayanim know who is this third judge. You can't keep the two Dayanim in the dark. But Ki Pligi, Das Balei Dinim. The machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chachom revolves around the agreement of the Balei Dinim. Rabbi Meir Sovereign Das Balei Dinim Nami Be'inon. Not only do the Dayanim have to be aware of the third Dayan, and have to be notified who that third Dayan is going to be, because the two Dayanim have to accept the third Dayan, but even with regard to Balei Dinim, according to Rabbi Meir, we need Das Balei Dinim. And therefore, the two Balei Dinim have to choose the third Dayan, to the same extent that the third Dayan has to be accepted by the first two Dayanim, because we're accepting the principle of Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav, so too, the third Dayan has to be acceptable in the eyes of the Bali Dinin, for Abonan Savri, no. Das Dayanim Be'inon. The Dayanim have to know who this third Dayan is, who's going to be their colleague and going to make up the Bezdin, whether he's Roy or not Roy. But Das Bali Dinin Lo Be'inon. We don't need that the third Dayan receive the stempel of approval, the agreement of the Bali Dinin. And therefore let the Dayanim choose the third Dayan, because they have to know that the third Dayan is Roy, he's a fit, he's suitable. But the Bali Dinim don't have to get involved. What I don't understand here is, it seems to me that the Gemara asks one question and gives an answer to a different question. Meaning, the Gemara is trying to get down to the basics. What is the Yesoda Pluta, what is the fundamental issue that divides Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? So first the Gemara thinks it's an issue of whether the Dayanim have to get involved in the choice of the other Dayanim, and the Gemara says no, everybody agrees that the Dayanim have to check out the other Dayanim, and we accept the principle of Rab. So then the Gemara says, well, the Machlokes is whether we need Das Bale Dina. I mean, you haven't really answered the question. What is the fundamental issue here? You're just repeating what we know. Rabbi says that the third dayan has to be chosen as a joint agreement of the two Bali Dinim. And the Chachamim say we don't need the Bali Dinim to get involved. Let the two Dayanim get involved.
But that's the point is, both of them say the two appointed Dayanim are going to choose the third. Rabbi Meir says the Bali Dinim have to agree to that third one.
Right.
The Chachamim say they don't have a choice in that.
Right. So what are they arguing about? In other words,
because before we thought that the two were going to choose the two Bali Dinim were going to choose the third judge, and the judges didn't have an option.
Well, it depends. Are you going with the Chachamim or Rabbi Meir? Let's take the Chachamim Shita. Right. The Chachamim Shita is that the two judges that were appointed now have to agree on the third judge.
And that's what they're saying Rabbi Meir says as well. That the two judges are going to pick the third judge, but the litigants...
I mean, that's where the Gemara switched it around. Rabbi Meir thought... I'm sorry. The Havamina, the Gemara originally thought that Rabbi Meir would hold that the decision on the third judge is exclusively from the litigants.
Right, but it's not. He's also saying the judges are picking, but now the litigants have veto power.
So, but basically, the shift here is in the understanding of whether the Dayanim have some sort of a veto power in terms of the third judge. But you follow? Mm. No, the Havamina was forget it. The Dayanim don't have to get involved in the choice of the third judge according to Rabbeinu, because Rabbeinu never accepted the principle of Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rav. Whereas the Chachom say no, the Dayanim it's critical that they get involved in the decision of the third Dayan, because they're responsible to make sure that every Dayan on the makeup of the court is appropriate. Fine, but again, the Gemara initially asks the question of what is the machlokas. I'll read to you the translation. He says, "Bamen nechleku Rabbi Meir v'Chachamim." So I understood that the Gemara is going to give me some sort of an insight. Rabbi Meir is going to say, let the Bali Dinim decide because he holds that there's some power to the Bali Dinim. And the Chacham are going to say, no, there's no power to the Bali Dinim. You know what I'm saying? That the Gemara hasn't given me a shred or how should I say, a dim light at the end of the tunnel to understand what brought about this machlokas between the Chacham and Rabbi Meir. I understand that you can formulate the machlokas. You want to know the content or the substance of the machlokas. That I understand. Rabbi Meir requires Das Dayanim. I'm sorry, Rabbi Meir requires Das Bali Dinim, and the Chachamim do not. They only require Das Dayanim. Okay, but you've just more or less reformulated the machlokas. I want to know what it's all about. Just give me one more minute. So, Bibir HaMachlokes, I'm reading here the Merome Sod that was the Netziv Mivalojin, Im Tzorech Bali Dinim, Das Bali Dinim Olo. Al pi shnei perushim b'divrei haGemara sheyotza hadin la'mito shehevi atosus. Rabbi Meir sover shetzarach das bali dinim. Why? Because Rabbi Meir holds she'anu rotzim shebali dinim shebal din yishma v'yekayim es psak hadin. We want to guarantee that the baldin will accept the psak and he'll fulfill whatever the Dayanim require of him to do, and he's accepting it. And therefore, the whole process of din will reach a emes lamito. It'll be a reality, because otherwise, that bal din might fly the coop or whatever it is. He's not going to be willing to pay. And the answer is, says Rabbi Meir, sheyomar vaday shadayin tarach l'schuso. By giving more power to the balei dinim in deciding the judges, the balei dinim will understand that the judges did the best. They put themselves out trying to find a way of being mezaka, and they'll accept the psak. And therefore, it's critical that even the third judge would receive the stempel of approval of the balei dinim, because otherwise, the balei dinim will say, "I didn't choose this dayan, and he somehow was inclined against me. I don't want to fulfill the psak." Chachamim, on the other hand, hold that al yidei kach she kol echad borer dayan echad ushnei dayanim. I'm sorry. Let me go over that one more time. Al yidei she kol echad borer dayan echad. Each one of the balidinim decide to choose one of the dayanim. Ushnei dayanim borim es hadayin hashlishi. Is that's enough to guarantee that it's a fair bezdin? Again, I can't tell you. I understand the nitziv 100%, but basically, he's saying is, what does it take to satisfy the balei dinim in such a way that they believe they're getting a fair judgment? And therefore, they'll implement the judgment and the verdict as it's handed down. Rabbi Meir wants to go very far. He wants to get the balei dinim involved at every level of choosing the dayanim. Even when we get to the third dayan, who logically should be appointed by the other two dayanim, who anyway have to know who this third dayan is, as we discussed, comes on Rabbi Meir and says, "No, that's not enough. We have to get the balei dinim on board even as far as deciding the third dayan." The Chacham say no. Each balei din decides on his dayan, and that's enough. And the third dayan who's chosen by the other two dayanim, well, my dayan is involved in that decision. Do you follow what I mean? So Reuven chooses his dayan. That's dayan number one. So Reuven is going to be satisfied with the third dayan because he knows that his dayan is also involved in accepting the third dayan. So it's my dayan who's accepting the third dayan, and that's enough to satisfy all the inhibitions and the phobias and the fears of the balei din. Yeah, Jerry.
Is there no discussion or concern that balei din number one is choosing a dayan, and therefore that dayan may be biased toward that first balei din, same with the other one?
Yeah, there is such.
The third one is really
right.
The objective.
Yeah, there is such an element here, but what overrides that element, which in a sense is in the shadows, and it's always something that we have in the back of our minds, is the fact that we believe that people are honest. And not only that, each Baal Din is getting his right to choose his Dayan, so we're left with an equilibrium here. We have Reuven choosing his and Shimon choosing his. And now the question is, how to set up the third Dayan? If you get the agreement of both Reuven and Shimon, the two Baal Dinim, as Rabbi Meir insists, then there's no way that the third Dayan should be biased in either direction. The Chachamim say, we don't even need that. The reason why the third judge is not considered biased is because he was chosen by the two dayanim that were respectively chosen by the balei dinim. Gufa, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, Eino Edim Chos Min Al Ashtar, and Ken Yodim Yoshev Imoyim. So that was the sheet of Rav, that the dayanim, the witnesses will have to know who the other witnesses are. Tanya Namiyachi, we also found this in a Braisa. Now this Braisa, which is going to support Rav, is a Braisa about Nekiyeh Hadash of Yerushalayim. That's a phrase that appears throughout Shas. Usually, Nekiyeh Hadash of Yerushalayim refers to the very strong, very intense, profound piety of the Jerusalemites. Like, for example, the Gemara says in Sukkah that the Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim would always walk around with their Dalet Minim for the entire Sukkahs. There was a certain element of extra piety. Here, however, the Rishonim have a definition of Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim that is relative to the context of our Gemara. And they say that these are the people who are makpid on Kavod HaTorah. They want to make sure that the Jewish religion and its implementation will never be questioned, there will never be a situation where there's a casting of aspersion on the process of Torah, of judgment, and so forth and so on. And therefore, what was that minhag? They were very careful, as we saw in Rav, to make sure that the witnesses knew who the other witnesses, because again, it's going to be very embarrassing to the dignity of the Torah if a shtar that was signed by witnesses now turns out to be invalid. So in order to guarantee that the shtar will be valid, each witness has to recognize the other witness. And he has to understand and be convinced that that other witness is valid, qualifies. Now, one could ask the following question. Before Rav said this as a sentence, as a halacha, he formulated a principle. And according to Rav, this is the minhag of all Eidim. Now you're quoting a Brisa that this was a special minhag amongst the Nekiyei Das Yerushalayim. That sounds like it contradicts Rav, that really, you know, we don't have to check out the other Eidim, and each Eid can sign on his own. It was only the Nekiyei Hadas who had a higher standard because they were so makpid on Kavod HaTorah, makpid on the bizoyon of Bezdin, if the shtar turns out to be invalidated. But that was only the Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim. So he quotes one of the Balei HaTosfos who says the following, Kol Adam, lo hayu chosmim, so this answer throws another light on this sugya of Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim. He's saying that the Nekiyei Hadas Yerushalayim went very far. They would not sign on a shtar together with someone who was considered Am Haaretz, meaning someone who did not have the ultimate, you know, live up to the ultimate standards and demands of Shmiras HaMitzvah, Shmiras HaAlocha. That's how far they went. As far as everyone else outside of Yerushalayim is concerned, they would check out the Eidim just to make sure that there was no psul. As we said before, the Anshei Yerushalayim went a step further, raising the bar, and they would not sign an ishtar together with an amoritz. Now the Marsha asks the following question. We have a principle all over Shas called Cheskas Kashrus. A Jew is assumed to be a kosher until proven guilty. So why then are we turning over worlds here in this sugya? Because of a chashash that maybe the next aid is not a kosher. Why not just rely on a chazaka? You know, we have no reason to believe that he's not kosher. So the Marsha answers that although most Jews are certainly ksherim, there are a number of Jews, many Jews, who unfortunately are psulim, who are amei haaretz, they don't know the law. And therefore, choshishim, we're afraid that the malveh, who's desperate to find two witnesses to sign on his shtar, because he needs that shtar in order to prove his case against the loveh, he will scrape the bottom of the barrel. You know, whoever he can get his hands on. He's not going to check out the scholarship of the person, whether he has a smicha from the rabbanut, or whether he's just a regular Amoritz. He's desperate, the Malveh. Now, honestly, Rabos, I have to tell you, I'm missing some piece of information. I do not understand this marsha, because it's not the malveh who gets two edim to sign the shtar. It's the loveh who does so. But what does the marsha mean when he says Shema Yikach Osam? Osam is a reference to these amorets. Hamalveh li'edim. It's not the Malva's responsibility to get Edom signed in the Shtar. The Lova has to sign two Edom on the Shtar. That piece of the puzzle, I don't...
So that's the... If they become... If they were Pasul Eders, then is the Shtar is no good.
Correct. So
the Malva is the one who's really concerned that the Lova has good witnesses.
Correct. So
otherwise,
why,
he's not going to get repaid.
So why is the Marsha saying that we're afraid that the Malva is going to get second-class witnesses? Right? Shema Yikach... That the Malva will take for Edim out of his desperate situation witnesses who are not Ksherim, who are totally ignorant. You know, they're Amei Oretz. I don't see why he blames the Malva for that. Maybe the Lova he needs the loan. Maybe he's desperate. But in my Gemara here it says the Malva. So I missed that point. Now this Bryce goes on to tell us other things about the Nikki Adas B'Yushalayim. Lo Yoshvim B'din Elim Kein Yodim She'Yoshvim Mayim. Okay, fine, that we said before. That we have an analogy between Edim who sign on a shtar and Dayanu who sit on a Bezdin. So the Nikki Adas B'Yushalayim will not tolerate sitting on a Bezdin without knowing who are the other Dayanim sitting on the Bezdin. And they would not sit down at a meal unless they knew exactly who was going to be sitting at that meal. So I thought initially that this is a kashrus issue. Why? Because if you have other people at the meal who don't meet up to your standards of kashrus, who knows what they're going to serve you? But that's not the way the Chafetz Chaim understood this Gemara. In Bir Allah, which is his super commentary on his own work, the Chafetz Chaim, the Mishnah Brura, he writes that the problem is that it's a gnai for a Talmud Chacham to sit at a Suda together with an Amoretz. You don't bake bread with an Amoretz. That's not a kashrus issue. And it says Elam Kain Yodim Mi Mesiv Imayim. It doesn't say Mi Mesiv Sham Imayim. Mashma Shekala Kpedi Shelo Lecho Kish Amoretz Yosef Betzido. He should not be eating with an Amoretz sitting to his side. Aval Im Svivo Yoshvim Talmidei Chachamim V'Yesh Gam Amoretz B'Seuda Ein Kpedo. So it's not the presence of, let's call it one Amoretz somewhere in the audience that's sitting at this banquet or in this simcha hall. That's not a problem. Because if that were a problem, then the Gemara should have said, Mi Mesiv Shami Mayim, who's sitting there in that room, whatever, find a better word than that. So therefore The Chafetz Chaim claims that this kpeda is only as to who's sitting right next to you. Who's the guy sitting next to you? Yeah, you want to get place cards, you know, seating cards. I don't know if in your cases did you make seating cards? It's a tremendous hassle. You have to spend 3 days, you know, making seating cards. First of all, you don't know who's going to show up at the wedding, but that's a different problem. But if you want to make seating cards, then you're going to have to make sure you don't insult anybody. And in this context, it would mean that if you have an Iki Adas B'Yushalayim, make sure you don't sit him next to an Amoretz. Because he's not going to be comfortable sitting next to an Amoretz. He has a kped on that. Now, what's the terrible thing if you sit at a Suda next to an Amoretz? I mean, is this about Gaiva? I mean, you think you're greater than thou? So I was thinking that you can go in two directions over here. Number one, a person should be careful about the friends he chooses. And an Amoretz is not the kind of friend you want to choose. An Amoretz, the Gemara says, for example, is Choshen on Trumas and Maisers. An Amoretz might not check his house for Chametz on Leil Erev Pesach. That's the Gemara says, an Amoretz is much more than what we think it is. It's not today you have people who are part of synagogues and communities, but they simply don't know that much. And Am Haaretz actually was mezalzel in the Kiyum HaMitzvah, so choose your friends carefully. And if people see that you're sitting down in a meal next to an Am Haaretz, they think that you're friendly with him and you're part of his clique, and you don't want that word to go out. The other approach, which I think is more satisfactory for me at least, is to say that you learn from a person when you eat with them. You sort of, it rubs off on you. In other words, if you have this close interaction with someone who's an Am Haaretz, it's inevitably going to have an impact on you. So be careful, especially when you're eating a meal, because that's when the Gemara tells us in Erchin, that's when people used to talk Lashon Hara a lot. You know, you have a whole chamula of people sitting around a table. What do they talk about? You know, they talk Lashon Hara. I always say that sports is 100% better than that. You know, if they talk about the football games, that's okay.
How about the influence you have on the other?
So that's where the Ki Adas B'Yerushalayim comes in. In other words, they were not Chabadnikim, if you know what I mean. They were not interested in Kiruv. So their perspective and their priority was not how much I can influence the other, but how much I would be influenced by the other. How much my reputation or perhaps my spirituality will be contaminated or lowered or impacted by my association with those who are Ami Haaretz. Now again, in today's context, maybe this din should be changed. Maybe we should be more inclined towards a Chabad approach. Why? Because today's Ami Haaretz, they're not negative influences. They just simply don't know anything. They're beans. I mean, Chazal didn't even have a dream in their wildest dreams of what the Am Haaretz of today are like, you know. Now again, if you're sitting next to a Jew who's, in my humble opinion, who's anti-Jewish, I mean, he hates Jews and he hates the fact that he's born Jewish, then I would be very careful about, you know, sitting next to him. And I don't fit into this category of Nekiyei Hadas B'Yerushalayim, no way, no how, but I think We you know, there is a limit, and we should be careful about who we associate with. And believe me, in most of these cases of self-hating Jews, there's nothing you can do to influence them. Again, maybe Chabad would disagree with me and say there's no lost Jew, everyone has a pintle yid and so forth and so on, but you know, I think about one of the Democratic candidates today, and I hope he won't get the appointment as the candidate, but he is such a self-hating Jew. I mean, it's like... I heard other things about him, people who knew him in college days, that he's a worthless individual anyway. But it has nothing to do with Judaism. Stop. You know. But this man has gathered together all the Arabs around him, and today there are more Arabs in America than there are Jews. And I don't know what's going on in Canada. I think the percentages are moving in that direction too. Anyway, so let's go on. We said that according to Rabbi Meir, this was the Sefer of our Mishnah. There is a system by which, al pi halacha, the Baldin could passel the Dayan. He could say to him, this Dayan is possel. And the Chachomim retort, how could you say this Dayan is possel? Do you have any evidence to that effect? So the Gemara asks on Rabbi Meir, Kol Kabini, the possel Dayne? What koch does he have, what authority does he have to determine that this individual is disqualified as a Dayan? And therefore I don't want to be judged by him, because he is possible. Rabbi Yochanan bar Chos shebesurich anu. The Mishnah is addressing a case where, in that society, in that location, the people who were sitting in judgment were not bekiyim b'din Torah. So again, we're not talking about a non-Jewish court; we're talking about a Jewish court, but the status of the individuals who would actually push themselves up to the bench and serve as dayanim was questionable. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says that the Baal Din has the right to say that he doesn't want to be judged by these people because he thinks that they are apostles. He wants to raise the ante. He wants Dayanim Mumchim. He wants experts who are Bekiyim B'Torah. Avol Mumchim. But in other cases, let's leave Surya out of it for a moment, where every Dayan is assumed to be a Mumcha. Again, we'll see whether we have to know he's a Mumcha, but let's say we have every right to assume he knows the law, and that's why he's sitting in judgment. Lo, then the Baal Din, even according to Rabbi Meir, could not say, I'm going to apostle. So let's say Reuven chooses his Dayan, and Shimon says, no, I can't accept that Dayan. He's apostle. He's disqualified. He's an Amoret. So in Surya, where it was unfortunately very common, this level of low level of knowledge, therefore, we don't have a chazaka to assume that every single Dayan, just because Reuven chose his Dayan, that Dayan is a Baki Bedin. There was an influx and a heavy volume of people who sat in judgment who were simply Amearets. They were not Bekiyim Bedin Torah. But if we leave the environs, the confinement of Surya, and we go out there into the world at large, then those who sit on a Beis Din have the status, and we assume they are mumchim, that they know the din. And here, even Reb Meir would agree that if Shimon says, "I don't want to accept your dayan, my friend Reuven," he doesn't have the power to do so. He cannot just make a declaration that this Dayan that you, Reuven, chose is possible. Who are you? Mi samcha. You have any evidence to that effect? So the Gemara now takes a look at the language of the Mishnah to see if this Gemara, this Ukimta of Rabbi Yochanan, fits into the language of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says the following, Hamidik Tani Seifa, the Seifa of the Mishnah says, Chachomim Omrim Emasai, under what conditions can the Baal Din pasul the Dayan? Is Bisman Shemevi Raya, Shem Krovim Opsulim? It's only if he has objective evidence to prove that they are either Krovim Opsulim. Amal Im Hayuk Sherim, O Mumchim, Epi Bezdin, Eni Yochel Oposlam. Now, from the fact that the Chachamim are saying that under these circumstances, Eini Yochel Poslam, it means that Rabbi Meir disagrees, and he holds that under those very same circumstances, Yochel Poslam. Now, what are the various scenarios in which the Chachamim say that the Baal Din, if he doesn't have any proof to support his claim, has no authority to disqualify a Dayan? Amongst the various scenarios, he has Ksherim or Mumchim. So we're talking about a Mumchim Ipi Beis Din, who is assumed to be, and we have proven him to be, a great scholar, and he knows the halacha. Come along, Chachom, you can't passel him. It means, by implication, that Reb Meir holds that even in the case of Mumchen, Namika Omar, Reb Meir, that the Baal Din could passel the Mumche. So then we get back to our original question. What right or authority does the Baal Din have to declare that this Dayan, who's a Mumche, is disqualified? Again, you see from the Chachamim that when they said he doesn't have the right to apostle them, he mentioned the fact that the Dayanim were Mumchim. Apparently Rabbi Meir holds that even though, despite the fact that the Dayanim are Mumchim, nevertheless, the Baal Din could apostle them. Now, what logic is there over here? So the Gemara says, you know what, you're not reading the Mishnah properly. You're building your case on the fact that the Chachamim said that even... or I shouldn't say even, leave out the word even, that the Chachamim say that if the Dayanim are Mumchim, then the Baal Din cannot disqualify them. So from that we want to derive that according to Reb Meir, the Baal Din does have the power to passel them. No. That's not what the Mishnah is saying. Hachi Kamar, let's read the Mishnah properly. The Mishnah is saying, Aval im hayuk sherim, meaning if the Dayanim are known to be Ksherim, we have no reason to assume otherwise, and we have no proof or evidence to passel them, then Nasu Kimumchim. They have the same status as those who were already appointed by the Beis Din in the past to be Dayanim Mumchim, because they're experts, very often opposed. Again, even though these Dayanim are only Ksherim, which means that their chazaka is like sherim. We've never tested them. We don't know their level. Maybe they aren't bekiyim, but we know like sherim. Say the chachamim, the Baal Din has no right to determine and declare they are psulim. Now, when the Chachamim in the Mishnah mentioned Mumchim, what they meant to say is that the status of Ksherim is equal to the status of Mumchim. That just like in the case of Mumchim, we know that they are reliable and these Dayanim are up to par. And even Rav Meir would agree in that case of a Mumche that the Baal Din has no right to declare that they're apostle. Say the Chacham, the same identical halach applies to a kosher, even though he's not a mumcha. And the Baal Din has no right, he has no legal authority to disqualify the dayan because the dayan is known to be a kosher. So we, at this point, we really don't know how far Rav Meir is willing to go. Does Rav Meir say that even in a case of mumchim, the Baal Din could passel them? Well, no, in the case of Mumchim, the Baal Din does not have that ability or that authority to apostle them. Toshma, what?
On what basis would he hold that they could?
That's, it's all based on a diuk in the Mishnah, meaning logically the Gemara has no support or justification for that position of Rabbi Meir, but that seems to be because when the Chachamim argued against Rabbi Meir, they said, Who gives the Baal Din a right to say about a mumcha that he's possible, that he's disqualified? So it seems that by implication, the Rav Meir would have said that even in the case where the Baal Din is, I'm sorry, where the Dayan is a mumcha, the Baal Din is still invested with the authority the legal authority to declare that he's possible. We don't know the logic of it, but that seems to be indicated by the language of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, no, you don't have to read the Mishnah that way. But at the end of the day, we're still unclear. We don't have a final conclusion. Tashma, but we have another Braisa. And the Braisa records the following. Amru lo le Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim turn to Rabbi Meir and they say, lo kol haminu. Lo kol haminu means you don't have the right to do such a thing. Sheposel dayan mumche le rabim. That you declare, you Mr. Baldin, Ruben, you say that this dayan, who's a mumche le rabim, he's got the most beautiful smicha, and he's known to be a mumche, and he was appointed as such, and he passed all his exams, and you're going to tell me he's not suitable, and he's not roy to be a dayan? But again, from the fact that Chacham are yelling at Reb Meir and saying, how could you entertain this idea that the Baal Din should have the authority to apostle someone who's a mumcha, it implies that Reb Meir himself said that Afal Pikein, even though he's a mumcha, nevertheless, the Baal Din can apostle him and say he's apostle. So we're back to our original question. How could it be that according to Rabbi Meir, the Baal Din could declare that this Dayan who's a mumcha is possible? So the Gemara says, you know what? That's not Rav Meir. Rav Meir never went that far. What about this Braisa? Ema, let's interpret the Braisa the following. This is what the Chacham was saying to Rabbi Meir. Lo kol haymenu sheposel dayan shehimchu rabim aleihem. In other words, this dayan, although he's not a mumcha l'rabim, he didn't take all his exams, he doesn't have the ordination and the documents to prove then that he was declared a mumcha l'rabim, but nevertheless the people have already accepted him as a mumcha l'rabim. He's already sat on a bezdin on many, many occasions, and the people at large, you know, power to the people, they've accepted him as a mumcha l'rabim. So Rabbi Meir says that since he's not technically a mumcha l'rabim, meaning he's never passed his exams, he was never formally ordained as a mumcha, therefore the Baal Din has a right to say that I don't want to accept this dayan. In my mind, he's not suitable to be a dayan. Ein hachinami, if you had a dayan mumcha who has all the credentials, he has what we call the CV, and he has a document on his wall that says, we hereby testify that this person, so-and-so, is a mumcha, then Rav Meir would certainly agree in that case that he cannot, that the Baal Din doesn't have the right to passel the Dayan who is a known and formally recognized and ordained Mumcha L'Rabban. It's only a case where people have accepted this Mumcha in the past, and you know he has a track record of being accepted on a Beis Din. That's called Himchu Rabim Aleihem. That's where a mayor says, well, the Baal Din has a right to say, well, I don't belong to that Rabim. You know, I'm in the silent minority, not in the vociferous majority. And Tanya Nami Hachi, I'm going to bring a brisa to support our final conclusion that Rav Meir didn't go as far as to say that the Baal Din has the right to apostle someone who has the formal ordination and is a recognized mumcha, because the brisa says Liolam Posel Veholich Achi Kabel Olav Bezdin Shemumcha L'Rabim. Diri Rav Meir. So what does that mean? Liolam Posel Veholich, meaning each one of the Baal Dinim could apostle the Dayanim that were brought by the other Baal Din, appointed by the other Baal Din, up until a certain point. Achi kabal aleim bezdin shemumcha l'rabim. Notice, once bezdin accepts and recognizes this dayan as a mumcha l'rabim, that's already too far. That's already beyond the possibility of the Baal Din to pasul the dayan divrei Rabbi Meir. So we see clearly that Rabbi Yochanan is right. Let's go back to Rabbi Yochanan, and here we'll end it. Rabbi Yochanan was the one who made the statement that when did Rabbi Meir bestow or give the Baal Din the right to declare that the dayan that his other Baal Din appointed is pasul? That's only in cases where we have reason to believe that maybe he's not a baki bedin, like Archos Shel Suri, if you remember that discussion. But in a case where a person has objective evidence that's established based on documentation and after all the exams that he is a mumcha l'rabim, in such a case even Rabbi Meir would agree that the Baal Din doesn't have a right to declare that this dayan is pasul. All this will lead us to the Gemara of Veha Edim, and that's the Gemara we want to pick up in Yirtzeh Hashem next week. Does anybody happen to have a pencil here that works? I have a pencil, but it needs to be sharpened, so we'll know exactly where we're up to, and maybe we could open the door here, because I'm supposed to fill in Masechta Sota here.